Channel 2. The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
Hello, good afternoon. Welcome to the Business Bunker Show here on KentBusinessRadio.co.uk in association with ChannelRadio.co.uk and BizRadio.co.uk. It's Tuesday, the 18th of August. You're listening to me, Paul Andrews, and the stonkingly gorgeous Okai the New, Jules Serkin. Back on a jaunt from Scotland.
I've had a wee jaunt.
Have you?
Yeah, I was saying to my husband, why is it when I do a Scottish accent, did I go up high like Dr. Finlay?
No, I was going to say that's Janet from Dr. Finlay's Facebook. There isn't a single listener out there that will know what we're talking about, I guarantee.
You have to Google it. Dr. Finlay, it'll come up like Carry On films, you know, from the 19 whenevers.
I want to say a big thank you to this week's show sponsors.
Oh, I was just about to ask.
Flexible training solutions for the glass glazing and wider construction industries. www.fitfortrade.co.uk for all your training, qualifications, occupational compliance and peace of mind. A huge thank you to the lovely folks from Fit for Trade for sponsoring this week's show.
Fit for Trade. I love the flexibility there. I mean, we should all be touching our toes every time we get up from our desk, and a little stretch as well. So thank you for reminding us, Fit for Trade.
Cool. Right. What have you been up to?
Well, Paul Andrews, I was really looking forward to going camping we started off in the Isle of Skye. We went to Ben Nevis. My new husband climbed Ben Nevis in 4 hours. Have you seen my bruise? I don't know whether you've seen
it. Yeah, that looks horrible. How did you do it again? That's
Well, this is why I didn't climb Ben Nevis. It would have taken me a lot longer than 4 hours. But so we went, the new husband had done some research and we found this guidebook and we went on what was known as an easy walk. And it was about probably 10, 12 miles along a riverbank. And it said, follow the road. It said, follow the road for about 7 miles along the brook.
Oh, you're not going to do the whole of this in a Janet accent, are you?
By the Brae.
Oh, dear.
So we walked by the Brae. Or is it the Burn? It's the Burn.
It's a Burn, not a Brae.
Yeah, we walked by the Burn. I think the Brae is a South African barbecue.
That's a South African barbecue. Yeah.
The Brae. So walked by the Burn. And we did. I was in fit flops, not walking boots, because I have a metal knee, as you know. And I can walk miles in my fit flops. They're not flip flops, they're fit flops. So they have a wobble board, which supports my knee. So I can do about 14 miles in them. But the terrain in Bonnie Scotland is a little bit different from Bonnie Kent.
Yeah.
And there were great big hummocks, or whatever you call them, of grass, like really tufty grass. And even my new husband was staggering about on them, and I said to him, you're going to break your ankle, you know. We're out in the middle of nowhere, we're out in the wilds, beautiful mountains, you've got Ben Nevis in the background, and I said to him, you're going to break your ankle, as he was, you know, wobbling around on these tufts, huge tufts of grass. And then we were walking, the path just disappeared that we were supposed to follow. And I was wading, we were both wading knee deep in peat mud because it had rained for 8 days previously. And so my toenails are still black, actually. They've still got peat. You cannot get rid of peat, Paul Andrews.
No, I don't invite him anymore because it was terrible to get rid of.
I set him up.
Moved into my spare room, did Pete? Yeah.
I set it up. You, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I'm still scrubbing the peat out of my toenails if Serenity Becker is listening, rather nasty. So we're waiting. In the end, I took my... There is a video of me on my Twitter of me walking barefoot because it was actually safer. Because where I'd walked, I was sliding off my flip-flops because they were slippery. And then we're by this wee riverbank, a bairn, I actually tumbled down the deep riverbank, not realizing I'd hit my elbow, hit my head on a great big boulder, and burst into tears because it was very, you know, I did a big tumble. And I haven't cried because I'm so old. You don't cry when you're old. You just carry on regardless. You know, chop your finger, you just carry on. But I did burst into tears, and I had a concussion. And Anyway, we somehow got out of it. It wasn't easy. My new husband was panicking, thought he was going to have to call an air ambulance or something. I said, no, I can do it. And we were staggering along. And then we walked back along the road, which was eventually we found it, which was about 8 miles with concussion. Very dizzy and very sick and stuff. And sort of a big egg on my head. And then we got a cab the next day and I was feeling a bit woozy. And the cab driver said, you need to go and get that checked at A&E. You know, there's a nice little hospital just down here. And I said, oh, no, it's fine. I said, I'm just in shock, I think. He said, oh, you're an expert on head injuries, are you? They're very forthright there.
Yeah.
So this cab driver marched me into the A&E where I did have concussion. But I never noticed the elbow because my head was like... So that elbow, actually, I love it because although it's green and blue and swollen, very puffy, can you see Paul Andrews?
Well, she's shown us this, listener, but of course you can't see it. I hope you've got some arnica on that.
I've got some arnica on it, Jill, which I got in a lovely little independent Scottish shop. But that elbow I love because for all its swollenness and painfulness, it saved my head because I had an egg on my head.
Yeah.
Had I not fallen on the elbow first, which I didn't realise at the time, I probably would have been much worse. So that was my story, why I didn't get up Ben Nevis. What I did do was I got a lovely, let my new husband stagger up Ben Nevis, where they had two people helicoptered off, because people go up there not prepared at all. It was just madness.
Well, you mean like you get idiots in flip-flops and stuff like that?
Yeah, those kind of people. And they don't take water and all sorts. My new husband went up with a flagon of water and a flare, because of what had happened to me. He had a flare and he had one of those tinfoil jackets that you put around. Because, of course, you get five different weathers in Scotland. Yeah. You know, it's completely extreme.
We could talk about this forever.
Can't we do a Scottish show?
We're only on day one at the moment.
So can't we do a Scottish show?
Yeah, no. Now we're going to have to shorten this. So did you have a night? I saw some of the food you ate. And one of the things that interested me was your fried haggis.
Oh, my goodness. That was absolutely delicious. And we brought some home. We went to we got it everywhere. Gav actually had battered haggis. Yeah, is that what you saw?
Yeah, that's what I saw.
He's mad about battered haggis. I was, you know, making noises about it and said it was disgusting. Actually, it was amazing, delicious. Hangover food, you know, morning after, fabulous. You don't know about hangovers.
No.
But very, very nice. And we found a butcher's in a little village and we supported all the local shops because although we were in a wagon, I made a point, you know, we could be very self-sufficient, but we made a point of shopping local and buying a coffee out and buying some, you know, cheese scones, delicious, and going to the local butcher. So, yeah, we brought back with us for my mum some lovely fresh trout. The salmon we had from the West Coast, absolutely divine. I've never had salmon like it, apart from one of my clients, who's in London, who's Scottish, Jewish, Scottish, and has a big family business. It was just delicious. But the haggis is out of this world.
Yeah.
And yesterday...
I like a bit of haggis, actually.
Well, we brought some back. We brought back a haggis lasagna.
Oh, blimey.
However, and it had crusted cheese on top. You know, when it's slightly browned? Oh, it was delicious. So, yeah.
Good. So you had a good time.
We had an amazing time. Everybody should go to Scotland. The people are amazing. They're lovely. We had a warm welcome. The little shops are struggling. They're really struggling. You need to go up and you need to buy a few things. I went on the Isle of Skye. I found a lovely Isle of Skye candle company. And they're making, can you smell?
No, I can't smell because we're not in the same place.
Delicious. And this is a mango candle. So they made beautiful candles, homemade soap. So a lot of presents were brought home. And I shall be tweeting about them when I do a little Scottish travel show, perhaps.
Cool. Okay. Well, that's good. I'm glad you had a lovely holiday.
Yeah. And how was Francais?
France was wonderful. I had a lovely time.
I saw you looking very relaxed, a little young bear on your lap, and you were feeding him pistachios.
We were eating pistachios, yeah.
Did you teach him how to?
Yeah. We were eating pistachios. Now, we had a lovely time. We had a fantastic gîte called The Grange at Lubo Bonnec. And Jamie lives in a small hamlet called Pardaion, which was just around the corner.
So what's it near that we would know?
Bergerac. Bergerac's about 20 minutes away. We had a lovely time. We went to our favourite restaurant in Aimee.
What did you eat?
Pizza, funnily enough.
Come on, what's
no, they do the most. They do the most fabulous pizzas.
We didn't have Maul and Fritz.
No, do you know what? Do you know what? I love snails.
Yeah,
and
nowhere
could I find snails on a restaurant anywhere.
You some round. I've got quite a few on my rose bush.
Yeah, we did have a lovely meal on Friday in a small restaurant called Simplicité, and it was a set menu and it was lovely. They had this vegetable cake for starter. I can't describe it any other way. It was a slice of cake, but it had vegetables in it. It was delicious, absolutely.
So
delicious.
Was it a savoury taste or a sweet taste?
Yeah, no, it was savoury cake, but it had the consistency of a sponge.
How delicious.
Yeah, but it was gorgeous, like absolutely gorgeous. And then we had steak and frit.
Who doesn't love that? When my young daughter, who's now 34, Sydney, she was about three, we went camping, and she used to suck her fingers at the time, like four fingers, somehow she used to get them in her mouth. So we went there, and you know, very middle-class family, because we got to the restaurant, she said in a very loud voice, "I want everything with Maul and Fritz." And she was three, you know. And I said to my husband, very middle-class, you know.
So
great food.
We had a wonderful time, and then the government made a complete mess of it.
They told you at sort of midnight, didn't they, or 10 o'clock at night?
Yeah, they told us that at midnight I got a text saying, if you don't get back by 4 a.m., you're in quarantine.
Well, that was wrong, wasn't it? Because it made everybody really scramble. That was totally wrong to do that, don't you think?
Yeah, well, we didn't even bother to try because we were 12 hours away from.
I saw the queues.
From the channel, yeah. So we just had to go with it, and now I'm in quarantine for 14 days. It's an absolute pain. It's the worst thing that they could have done.
Should I send you a little veg box?
Yeah.
And
anyway,
some
so we had a wonderful holiday, ruined as normal, like everything, by the government.
Well, you know what, Paul? They're damned whatever they do. Look, Italy have just brought in a new lockdown because the clubs were open, the nightclubs were open, or as I would call them, discos, as they were in my day. And, you know, there's a spreading, so I read, in the under 40s. Of COVID in Italy because of these nightclubs, the tourists coming in as well to clubs. So, you know, Italy have brought in this. The government have to do it. And they shouldn't do it at 10 p.m. at night.
It's interesting.
Could they do it? When would it have helped you?
It's interesting. We didn't go out very much, to be honest. But we did spend a day in Saint Emilion.
Yeah.
Which is a beautiful town. It's obviously the
cathedral town,
it's a church town. There's this big church on the top of a hill. It's a very steep hill, Hovis type hill. But obviously, Saint Emilion is very famous wine.
Yeah.
And it's full of wine shops, and Amanda bought most of the wine that they had on offer.
Yeah.
But we spent a day there walking up the hill and stuff like that. And absolutely everybody, it was mandatory to wear masks outside.
Really?
Yeah, so everybody had to have a mask on full time.
Even when you're not too close?
Yeah. People were wearing masks permanently and getting very umpty with tourists that weren't wearing masks. We had masks, luckily, but it was not easy walking up that hill with masks on.
You can't breathe. Yeah. I think I said on the previous show that I went to the plumber's merchants for an hour and a half, and it was in a hot warehouse. I had to go upstairs, of course, the lights. And I have a thyroid problem, as you know, which affects lungs. And I also had pneumonia, which is what broke up my previous marriage. And I was very ill. I got pneumonia and pleurisy. And I was bedridden for about 6 months because I wasn't treated. And can you feel the bitterness in my voice there?
Yeah, I can. Yeah.
My ex.
I'm not bitter.
And I was very slim in those days, and I lost about 2 stone, and I was very fit, but it's affected my lungs. So my lungs are scarred. So when I wore that mask going up the stairs, it was really quite nasty. I couldn't breathe properly. Yeah. And in the end, I just said, I'll have all that. I'll have that bath. I'll have that tap. And I just couldn't wait to get out. So I've got the worst bathroom suite coming. The first one by the door, you know. Was France for tourists? Did you feel safe there?
Yeah. I mean, we hardly saw anyone. I mean, Jamie lives in the middle of nowhere. It's very rural, and we saw no one. I mean, we spent most of our time around the pool or barbecuing or in the supermarket.
So there's no way you've got COVID and you drove yourself.
I didn't meet anyone.
Exactly. Yeah. And I just wonder how they're going to enforce it, because, you know, you're being diligent, you're staying in, but will everybody do that?
No, I don't think so. And the way they enforce it is by random visits to see if you're there.
We don't do politics on this show, but I don't know if you saw the celebrations for the Pakistani independence.
Yeah, that went
and out. The poor police were just there, and in the end, the police retreated. And it was a very, very sad video to watch because, you know, they couldn't control. It was a huge, huge crowds.
Well, you know, this is why everybody's getting upset. It's because there's been so many things happen and places people go. And then, you know, then they impose a quarantine on people that really haven't been anywhere. Anyway.
Exactly.
You
look extremely healthy.
I want to read a tweet.
I do.
From the lovely folks. You're going to read one, aren't you?
No, I'll let you first because, you know, always age before beauty.
Yeah. Michael Park Surveyors. We're well versed in changes in legislation. Health and safety compliance is high on our agenda, so we can ensure our clients are fully compliant and up to date at all times. Michael Park Surveyors, lovely guys over there in Medway who look after your commercial property needs in the southeast of England. Find out all about them by going to their website, which is www.michaelparks.co.uk.
There's a tweet to remind us all that it's week 3 of Eat Out to Help Out. Use that hashtag. There's a reminder of those traders. And this is from a gentleman called JJM_Ealing. He's the owner of John Martin Estates, chair of Pitshanger Village Traders Association. He's a campaign leader and he's a London category win and judge. You can find him on John Martin Estates. com. So he's reminding us all that it's week 3 of Eat Out to Help Out. See if your local independent restaurant is doing that. Hopefully they are opening on a Monday, Tuesday, or is it Wednesday as well?
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah. And drink local and do that local. Little shout out to Mary Jean UK, Mary J-E-A-N UK. She has a website where you can get cruelty-free beauty products and beautiful home fragrance. Guess where she's based, Paul Andrews?
Where?
Bonnie, Scotland.
Oh, Scotland.
Yeah.
Oh.
But she will, you can go on her website and she will send to you, post to you. So it's Mary Jean UK. And she was following my little trip. Also, a big hello to Bob Beattie. He's BOBBT2417. He's Scottish too.
He lives in Maidstone.
Yeah, he was giving me some lovely tips. And he's a mechanical services engineer and knows about all sorts of infrastructure and stuff and eco stuff.
Yep. A big hello to DC Weddings UK. They've been lighting things up red in support of the events industry.
It looked magnificent. I saw.
Yeah, fantastic.
What they did. It was the Folkestone, the Grand, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Fantastic stuff. DC Weddings UK, well done. A big shout out to you. I also want to tell you about this. Summer Networking and Cocktails taking place this Thursday, the 20th of August, 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. Join small businesses and the self-employed people with the Federation of Small Business for a relaxing summer networking event. You'll have the chance to mingle with fellow business owners and hear from local FSB representatives about the way we're supporting local firms through this difficult period. Suffolk-based Bob Scott, owner of VIP Cocktails, will show us how to make some fantastic cocktails in the comfort of our own homes. You can book the event by going to www.fsb.org.uk/event-calendar/summer-networking-and-cocktails.
I like the sound of that.
Do you know what, Asia, now to welcome for the very first time onto the Business Bunker show, the lovely Natalie Whitcomb of Whitcomb HR. Good afternoon, Natalie. Thank you so much for joining us on this Tuesday afternoon. We're really looking forward to talking to you and I hope you're well.
Afternoon, and really excited to be here and talking to you too.
Yeah, it's going to be lovely. We want to find out all about you and what you do. So why don't we kick off with that? Why don't you kick off by telling us a bit about you, your history, and then a bit about your company, Whitcomb HR, where you started and what your primary aim is.
Perfect. Okay. So I started HR at uni. I don't know why I thought HR would be the thing that I wanted to go into. Right. So I started that back in the day when I did my degree. So I did business and HR management.
Right.
And then I went into London, did a bit of London life, because you've got to do a bit of London life these
Whereabouts
days.
In London, Natalie?
Liverpool Street.
Oh, wow. Right, yeah. In the city.
Right in the city for about 5 years doing HR.
Right.
And then...
I'm sorry, who was that with?
That was with a company called Ronin Capital.
Right, okay.
Based in the US, but they had a small office over here, so...
Right. Are they still around?
Unfortunately, because of coronavirus, they've actually gone bust. And they were a really big company.
Well...
In the US, they made a lot of money, but unfortunately now, it's all gone a bit wrong for them.
They're not the only ones, that's for sure.
No, this is the thing at the moment, isn't it, which we're hearing a lot of. And then I started working for a company with 250 employees based in Bearsted, that's G-Forces.
I know G-Forces,
yeah.
In Caring Lane, yeah.
So I did that for another 5 years working there. And then I went off on maternity leave, had my daughter, and decided that I could do HR for small businesses in the area. I found a little niche that not many people are doing that for small businesses. And that's when I started up my own thing, really.
Okay, and when was that you started?
2017,
so that's, 3 years ago.
Yeah.
I'd love to know what you feel that your company specialises in. Before we do that,
I just want to ask another kind of question, because
an even better one.
Yeah, mine's much better than yours. because we kind of skipped over the fact that Natalie started her own business for the first time whilst having a young child.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to explore.
This is what women have to do, actually.
No, I understand that, and I understand that a lot of mums start their own business for the flexibility of it.
And was
that part of the motivation?
That was definitely part of the motivation, but looking back at it, I wish I'd had that full-time time basically to start it, instead of working full-time and then going off on maternity leave, then part-time starting a business and looking after a newborn baby.
Yeah.
In hindsight, it would have been better for me to have a couple of years of starting up the business and everything and then doing that. But it worked fine in the end.
You look very normal now, you know. I mean, the hair looks good, you know. There's no sort of nappy
thing you.
Behind your ear or anything.
Yes. Oh, sorry, I thought you were talking about me.
Juggling is what we have to do, all of us. And if you're running your own business, it's not just doing the HR, is it? It's doing everything.
And I think that's what's interesting with Natalie's journey is that, you know, we do these things and then in retrospect we go, well, maybe we would have done that differently. But you can never know that. You can never know that when you start out, you know. It's like, you know, you might have said, I'll tell you what, we'll put it off till 2020. And that's going to work, isn't it?
Actually, 2020 has been quite a busy year.
For an HR consultancy, it is. It's just the rest of us that are dead.
So can I ask my question now, Paul?
Yeah, yeah, you can, if you really must.
Occasionally, you know, I get a little word in.
Yeah.
I wanted to know, because you're focusing on SMEs in the UK, what is your speciality, do you think? How are you helping the SMEs?
The main thing I've been focusing on at the moment, especially through this whole coronavirus pandemic, is mental health and helping employers really get on the bandwagon of mental health being a thing, because a lot of them are like, oh no, everyone's fine. And it's like, no, actually they might not be, especially working from home, not being able to communicate in the office properly, using Zoom all the time. It's very different for people. And that's been one of our main focuses really at the moment. But obviously from a HR point of view, we cover the whole generalist HR function for small employers. So we go from the onboarding, recruitment even, company values, making sure they're spread out throughout the company, and everything from start to finish of employment law, making sure that people are covered properly, contracts, those sorts of things.
It's interesting, isn't it, that I don't think that we fully appreciated the possible mental health epidemic that we're going to face as a consequence of this lockdown. You know, when you start looking at it, the there are a whole group of business people that have been excluded by the government in terms of support.
Yeah.
You know, so you've got 3 million business people with no support whatsoever. And you can only imagine what they're going through mentally in terms of the anguish of where they are. On the other hand, you've got 7 million employees currently working for the government on furlough who are treating it as a holiday. But come September, October time, I think an awful lot of those people are going to end up unemployed.
Already, I think the stat is now that 1 million people are already being made redundant.
Yeah.
And by October, I think that's going to double or even triple. And it's just a scary prospect, really, for people.
Yeah. I don't know if you know, I own Jobs in Kent, a recruitment portal. And yeah, and our data is showing us that we expect around about 4.5 million unemployed, which is going to be devastating, and the mental anguish that goes with that is going to be huge.
Yeah, so we found a lot of people working from home who don't have family that they live with, or they don't have friends that they live
on
with.
Their own, sitting on a bed sometimes on a computer,
and it's not good for their mental health. So I've been that person that people can call up if they need anything, or I check in with them every couple of weeks, just making sure that people are okay, basically.
Yeah. My daughter works in sales. She's a sales manager in London, and she has had women mothers phoning up in tears in the evening because they're trying to reach their targets at home with 2-3 small kids, and they're feeling guilty because they're sticking the kids on monitors all day while they're trying to work in another room, and they just phoned up my daughter in tears.
I've experienced that myself, only for a week actually. So I had a week of working with my child on my lap virtually the whole time, and then my husband was furloughed, so I was like, there we go, you can take
I mean, let's be honest, some people are loving furlough, some people are loving it, you know.
It's interesting, isn't it? And I want to get Natalie's views on this, because it seems to me that I've literally just finished a phone call with my office talking about what we do going forward, because a lot of people have now experienced work from home.
Yep.
And I think it's a trend that will continue after the pandemic's finished.
Yeah. It's a very mixed bag though. So I've got 12 clients now that I work with, and we've got some manufacturing. The manufacturing clients, they have to come in. So some people working from home, but they've had to just make sure that the measures are in place so that they can be.
The social distancing for manufacturing must be very difficult.
Yeah. So they furloughed quite a few people so they could actually get the distance in place. And then we've done like shift changes and things like that.
And bubbles, working in bubbles.
Yeah, that sort of thing. But the techie companies that I work with and marketing companies, a lot of them are offering people to just work from home now, or do it so that there's only 10 people coming in at a time. So they're doing 3 days a week working from home, 2 days a week coming into the office. So it's a very mixed bag.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, we've in my own business, we've started to look at the fact that we don't need as big an office as we have.
Yes.
So we're looking at downsizing the office, only having one or two people in at a time, and then everybody working from home. That's great if at home you've got the resources to do it. Yeah. So if you have the space, if you have the time. One of the problems during lockdown, of course, is that the schools have been closed as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you've got school age children, you've had to look after them during lockdown too.
Yeah. And actually be their teacher as well, haven't you?
So, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And I'm not quite sure. Not quite sure. There's a lot of teachers that have been amazing and sent lessons and that, but there's a lot that are on my beach outside, not doing anything.
Yeah.
And
my homeschooling's going very well. I put her in detention.
7 hours a day.
Yeah, yeah.
In the naughty corner, yeah.
In the naughty corner, yeah. With
have
dog.
You thrown? I don't think you say rubber anymore. Have you? You know, our generation.
The ball rubber. Yeah.
Yeah, my maths teacher used to throw.
I think they banned that, Jules. Yeah, I think they banned that in 1934, love. After you'd left school.
My maths teacher used to throw the board rubber and he'd call me out to the front. Miss Brooker, come out to the front and do a multiplication on the board, and you would absolutely tremble because I'm not good at maths, as Paul knows. And then, you know, they'd throw the thing at you, which is not called a rubber anymore, or a black
ball rubber. It was a ball rubber.
Yeah, it was a great big wooden thing.
Don't think they'd get away with that anymore.
Or they'd get the boys by the ear, you know, drag them. I want to ask Natalie something. So One of my friends was sent an email. She works for a big company, which I won't mention, but a big global company. And they sent out this really nice email saying, how have you been getting on working from home? Would you like to continue? Would you like to go back into the office? You know, how's it all working? Yeah. Which I thought was a really good thing to do. But my question to you is, what would you do, what can your, you know, people do if an employee refuses to go back because of fears of COVID?
That's been a thing that's come up. And obviously, everyone's feeling differently about the pandemic, aren't they?
Yeah.
So we've tried to be really, like say with the manufacturing, that's come up a lot in there because people are like, well, I don't want to go back. People don't have to go back yet. October, we could be furloughed too, blah, blah, blah. And so what we've tried to do is people that aren't too comfortable with going back, we've worked, put them working from home until October or gradually coming back in.
But so how can you work from home if you're manufacturing on a conveyor line?
That's an office. That's an office-based
one. Okay.
The manufacturing ones, we've had them come in and show them what the working practices are going to be like and then have to say to them, like, this is how it's going to be, are you happy with that? And most of the time they have been.
Yeah,
it's been quite helpful. Anyone that can work from home, we'd always just say work from home as much as you can. If we need them back, that's when we do the 2-3 days a week. We sent out a survey as well to each employee, same sort of thing, finding out anyone else that in their household should be shielding, anything like that, so that we know what they've got basically.
It's interesting, Natalie, isn't it? I'm assuming that for a company like yours, Whitcomb HR, there are going to be opportunities here for you to help more small businesses, because as you're going to have this mix of much more flexible employment patterns, you know, with some people working in your premises, some people working from home, some people doing a hybrid job. You know, there's going to be, going forward over the next few years, I can see lots of different ways of working, and all of that's got to be managed from an employee safety point of view, an employee happiness point of view, an employee regulation point of view.
And the support of posture at work, you know, whether you've got a standing desk or something to elevate your computer, if you're working, you know, are you working on a bed? Are you working on a kitchen table?
And you mirror it working from home. That's the sorts of things that we've had to look at already.
Yeah.
And like the display screen equipment things, like making sure that everyone's got everything they need.
Yeah. Interestingly, I also own Fruitworks in Canterbury, which is a community workspace, hot desking space. And one of the things that we're anticipating happening is a lot of home workers, especially corporate home workers from London, they get bomb crazy after a few days and they need some human contact. One of the things that we're seeing is people will work from home 3 days a week and then come into Fruitworks and work 2 days a week in a community space.
Yeah,
so you know, to get some human contact and stuff. But again, all of that has to be managed. And, you know, it's an interesting thing on top of the fact that for small and some medium-sized enterprises, managing HR is a difficult function.
Yes. And also at the moment, we've had like furlough that no one had heard of.
Yeah, exactly.
All these new words.
All these webinars and everything, like, how are we managing this? Now redundancies are happening as well, which unfortunately I hate doing. But
well, this is a good question. So how can an employer, Natalie, move an employer from the furlough to a redundancy?
So with that, we have to look at whether they can do part-time working or anything first, make sure that that's happening, because we don't want to make people redundant. We don't want to be one of those stats that are making people redundant, basically. So if they can do part-time working or shorter hours, anything like that, first of all, have those conversations. If they can move into a different area that's actually growing or anything like that. But then after that, they have to have the conversations, the consultation period, sit down with them, talk to them about the situation, and then go down the redundancy process, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it looks like a lot of people are going to end up in that process.
Yeah. And they've got to do it right, because there could be...
I was just about to say, and it's incredibly important to follow the correct process of this. I'm just going to make a statement. Whether you agree with me or not is entirely up to you. But I've been in business for a long, long time, and I know lots of people in business, especially smaller businesses. And the problem is with owner managers is they talk in terms of fairness as they see it rather than processes. Yeah. She's smiling knowingly. So she's been through this, you know, so a lot of people go, yeah, well, you know, it's bloody obvious I can't afford to employ them and I can't afford to make them redundant. So I just told them to sod off. Mm-hmm. And yeah. You go, no, you cannot do that. And they go, well they could leave if they wanted to.
The ACAS fairness is very different to someone else's fairness.
Exactly. Yeah. And quite often I talk to people because people ask me questions about business all the time for one reason.
Because he's got a memory like an elephant, Natalie. He knows everything. He knows everyone.
Amazing.
Yeah. He's a mover and shaker.
Yeah. But basically, I, and a lot of this I learned the hard way myself in the early days of being in business, where I had to go through these processes and failed to follow the process properly and got into trouble over it and all those kind of things. And you tell people these things and they go, yeah, yeah, yeah. But then when it comes to it, they go, oh, no, I just told them to get lost. And you go, what? What?
What I've started doing with a lot of small businesses, they will say, oh, we want to do such, like, we want to get rid of such and such. And I'm like, right, let me handle the process. I'm going to do the whole thing from start to finish so you don't get involved at all, basically.
That sounds like a really, really good idea. So you're a mediator almost.
Yes. Well, yeah.
Exactly. And that's the point I wanted to get to with this, because even if you think you can handle it, I personally think it's better to hand it over to someone like Natalie.
Yeah, and it does really help. Obviously, they need to be involved because it's their business at the end.
Yeah, of course.
We need to know the ins and outs of why it's happening and everything like that.
But one of having been involved in a couple of tribunals myself, one of the things that I found is that when you try to do things yourself as a business owner, the problem is workers can then personalise it. And they go, you're only making me redundant because you don't like me.
And that does happen all the time.
Exactly. And therefore, I think by having an intermediary like Natalie, like Whitcomb HR, you remove a lot of that emotion.
The emotion is the
very
thing,
black
isn't
and
it?
White. It's like, well, this is the reason. This is the finances. This is the situation. This is where we're at.
There's a young lady that's just sent me her CV, and I've known her for quite a while professionally, not very well, and she said that since she's had a baby and gone back to work, they've been being quite nasty to her. Mm-hmm. Sort of a little bit of bullying going on, I think, and I might put her in touch with you afterwards for a little bit of advice. Definitely. Because that's, it's a scary time, you know, you've got a baby, you need to hold on to your job, but you're being perhaps not treated properly.
Yeah, feel like you've been pushed out a bit.
Yeah, and that does happen a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And there are a lot of businesses, like, you know, I specialise in hospitality, PR and marketing. And, of course, a lot of the small businesses, the small restaurants that I love, the individual ones, the independent ones, have got tiny kitchens and they can't have five chefs in there, and a kitchen porter and the washer-up and all the other stuff. So they're really struggling to give the service that they were. And a lot of them are having to probably look at redundancies in September, October.
Hospitality, unfortunately, has been hit pretty hard, hasn't it?
It's
good at the moment that we've got the 50%. Monday, Wednesday, haven't we?
But also the beauty business, you know, we had Serenity Becker on not long ago, who's based in Whitstable and Faversham. Mm-hmm. She's got two salons, and, you know, about 70% of her income is from facials, which they weren't allowed to do. She does very high spec facials.
My sister's in the beauty business. She runs her own beauty consultancy, basically. Mm. And she's not been able to do anything, really. Like, now. Now, I think it changed on Saturday, didn't it?
It did, last Saturday.
And,
you know, because it was a very scary time for Rebecca.
Yeah.
I've had a massage the other day. I have one regularly because I've got an impingement on my shoulder.
And don't let her start on her medical problems. We'll be here all day.
Oh, Natalie, it's a very, very difficult impingement. And I think it's from doing backstroke, you know, trying to be healthy. But I think I've just overdone it. Anyway, I have a massage regularly, which really, really helps more than anything. plus collagen tablets also help. And I have to have the massage now face down. I can't flip over and she can't work on like that. But it works because, you know, she can still work shoulders and back.
What a shame.
Yeah, shame. Face down. So yeah.
I want to kind of move away from just face the down. COVID stuff.
Yeah.
I want to move away from just the COVID stuff. And talk to Natalie a little bit now about HR in general, as far as small and medium-sized businesses are concerned. For a long time, I worked alongside my businesses as an angel investor, investing in startup businesses. And one of the things I consistently found with small, early-stage businesses is they have this tendency to put off doing things that need doing because they don't appear to add anything to starting the business. And what I mean by that is things like contracts of employment and terms and conditions and internet policies and all that kind of stuff. Is that something that you can deal with? Is it something you deal with?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, so recently, actually, I've had two people come to me saying they're a one-man band, they want to employ someone, what do they do? So I set them all up, offer letters, contracts of employment, any policies that they might need. I always say under 5 to 10 employees, you don't need a full company handbook, but there will be certain policies that you will need to go through all of that. Just make sure that they've got everything set up. They're checking right to work documentation, all of that sort of thing. Yeah. Putting pensions in place, because that's now a thing that you have to make sure you have.
Yeah.
So it's very important having that process in place for new employers, basically. Yeah. They've gone from them just dealing with themselves to then having to employ someone or wanting to employ someone, and just making sure they've got everything set up properly for that.
Yeah,
so let's just talk through what you said about pensions. So under 5 to 10 employees, you don't need a pension?
No, sorry, that was just for company handbook. Pensions, you need, any employee needs one.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Just one employee, you have to have a workplace pension.
Okay.
I was going to ask you something then, and she interrupted me, and now I've forgotten what
I'm just
it was.
Thinking I don't have a workplace pension.
You're in breach.
Yeah, for myself.
In breach of yourself.
I keep, go on. Yeah. I keep investing merrily. It doesn't do very good.
I've forgotten completely what I was going to ask Natalie now, because you interrupted me.
I would like to ask
it was one of the best questions ever.
Yeah, I'm sure. While you think about that and rack your brains, I'll ask Natalie, if there are young people listening who might be interested in getting into HR, I know that you did a degree. Mm-hmm. Which uni were you at?
Canterbury Christchurch.
Oh, wow. Local. How would you suggest they get into HR, and would you recommend it as a career?
I definitely would recommend it. I don't look back and think, oh, I wish I'd gone and done something different. Mm. I love doing HR. I love helping people. I love speaking to people. But to get into it, I wouldn't say you necessarily have to do a HR degree. I think experience is more important, really. Mm. My other sister was my HR assistant for 4 years at G-Forces, and she didn't have a degree in HR. She started doing her CIPD, so that was really beneficial. The CIPD is the Chartered Institute of Personal Development, and that's important to have, I think, over a degree. My degree didn't cover that, so then I had to do my CIPD afterwards whilst working. So I think if you had that as a basis, even level 3, level 5, that can be beneficial. And then going into it, I think experience, just getting some sort of HR experience, is really important.
No, absolutely. And HR is a very broad field, isn't it? There's a lot of things that you can cover
in
HR.
Like some people specialise in learning and development. Some people specialise in just the employment law side of things. I'm more of a generalist because I think small businesses need that because they can cover more things then.
Right. I've thought about what my question was and I've remembered. Yeah.
And it's a really good one.
It's a humdinger. And Natalie's going to go, no. That'll be right. No, I just wanted to ask you how you felt, whether you're aware of this or whatever. One of the things I've seen with people that start to go forward to employ their first person, is they look at it and they go, "Oh, I've got to do payroll, and I've got to do this, and I've got to do a workplace pension, and I've got to do earnings and all of that stuff," and they go, "I'll just employ them freelance."
Yeah.
And I don't know if you've come across that, but of course there are now a lot of regulations that don't allow you to, you know, IR35 and all those kind of things that don't allow you to employ someone on that basis, on a full-time basis. Is that something that you advise on, you know, the type of employment that can be offered?
Yes, definitely. So people normally come to me with options. They think, oh, I could do this as a freelance basis, but normally that's more expensive to employ anyway. So you look at how much a holiday is going to cost, how much statutory sick pay potentially could cost, because obviously you can claim that back. No, you can't claim that back, sorry. You can claim maternity back, but you can't claim the statutory sick pay. So it's just looking at all of those things and seeing how much the hourly rate of a freelancer could be instead of getting someone employed. And most of the time, it's better to employ people, especially with our IR35 in place now. Because you can't have someone working full-time for you in on all your equipment, on you're telling them what to do, that sort of thing. So. It does work out.
And anyway, even people on temporary contracts have full employment rights. So they, these days, you know, once upon a time they didn't, but nowadays they have full employment rights, even if they're on a 0-hour contract. So you're right.
Notice periods, you have everything like that anyway. So
So I'm thinking about when winter comes, doom and gloom. That's me today. Beautiful, sunny. We're all, you know, able to eat al fresco at the moment and feel quite safe. What happens when winter comes and we have flu season, and that when an employee gets a tickly sore throat and thinks it might be COVID, but it's probably just a common cold? How are we going to manage this? How are employers going to manage this?
I think they're going to have to use the same like statutory sick pay type thing. The process, the sick pay processes that they have, sick and absence processes that they have. If they can work from home, I think that will be a thing that will be quite beneficial at the moment. Has worked. If it's manufacturing, it will have to be following the sickness policies and processes that they have. Hopefully most companies have got those policies in place. That'll be the thing that they need to look at now.
Really. It's going to be very difficult. Very difficult. And there are going to be the employees that just, you know, that do get ill a lot more than others, which they can't help.
And that's why, doing Natalie's marketing for her, that's why having an HR specialist company on tap is so important now. You know,
they need that quick fire policy, like send out to everybody. That's what they need, really.
And that's what I love about what you do. You're there on tap if needed. You've got all the expertise if needed. You know, so people presumably can come to you and go, I need help with this, I need help with that. And they can cherry pick, you know, they go, I just need to help with that. And you can give them help with that or advice or, you know, tell them what to look out for.
So I work on like an ad hoc or retainer basis. So some companies have me on as a retainer because they think they might need a certain amount of time per month. Some companies, like the ones with the one employee that are coming on, I just say, let's do it ad hoc. Whenever you need me, give me a shout.
I feel we're in safe hands, don't you, Paul?
The time's gone quickly talking to Natalie because it's been interesting, and because there's so many things happening at the moment because of the circumstances we're in. It's an HR specialist dream, really.
Well, like Natalie said at the beginning of the show,
all these things that need sorting out, you know, like, am I furloughed? Am I not furloughed?
She's never been busier.
Am I partly furloughed? You know, what do I do if I'm ill? You know, am I still furloughed if I'm ill while I'm furloughed? And yada, yada, yada.
Well, should we say the word unprecedented yet again?
Yeah, it is.
Circumstances and all these new words like furlough and whatever. That's a big learning curve. But we were just in Scotland going on an amazing tour, and I love Scotland. Anybody listening, you've got to go. I'll more of that later. But it was very
sad.
We had
put in a bid to send her there permanently.
Well, just for a Scotch pie, I'd go.
We swapped her for a fried haggis.
It was very sad to see a lot of hotels curtain shut, not open. And also, they seem to be stricter on the old track and trace. So when we went into places, they were taking our phone number and stuff. But what they were, in one restaurant they were doing, was giving everybody the same blooming pen.
Yeah.
to write their thing. And I just said, no, I'll get my own pen, thank you, out of my bag. It's just little things that the employers have got to think of.
Exactly. Well, just because it made me laugh, I'll tell you this. I was chatting to someone on Twitter the other day, and they ran a small bistro. And they were going, the government had done nothing to help us. And I said, well, what about, you know, help out, eat out? We don't open Mondays and Tuesdays. Oh, right. Okay. Yeah.
That's what I was thinking. You know, a lot of the businesses that have lost money have to think outside the box and maybe open on a Saturday or a Sunday.
In their ways, aren't they? So they don't want to move around things.
But people hate change, don't they? Yeah. They just hate change. I've always done my washing on a Monday morning. So,
if only I'd have known. I've got some vestment doing.
But Paul called me and I was doing the laundry. I had a laundry bag in my camper van, but my new husband chose to ignore that. So I did all the washing when we got back on Sunday morning, and then I found a load more of his essential shorts that he likes to wear. You know. So I was just pegging out today when Mr. Andrews phoned me and said, do you want to come on the show? I said, sure.
My husband has a floor drobe, I call it. Because put it in the basket, but no, it goes on the floor every time.
Yeah,
well, absolutely. I blame the mothers, you know. Don't you? With my three kids, and you've got to remember this, Natalie, I taught them all when they were very young how to clean the toilet with a toilet brush. Yeah. You take it, you whiz it round, you tap it, a little bit of eucalyptus oil.
Do you know, Natalie, Jules has a fixation about toilets. No, she does. And wherever she goes in the world, the first thing she sends me is a picture of the toilets. Okay.
I hope you haven't been to China because of the toilets.
I have. Yes. Well, the holes and the... actually, probably my worst ever toilet was in India. By the Ganges, where you're out there in flip-flops as you are because you're a tourist, and then you realize there's sewage running down the road and you've got bare feet with cuts on, and I said to our guide, I started to worry about where I would go to the toilet, and he said, I'll take you to the best one, he said, and he took me to the best one, which I was heaving going in. And it was a hotel, not a one-star hotel.
We didn't see many Scottish toilets because she took her own with her.
I took my own thing. Yeah. But even that, the camper vanning, it's so small. I'm 5'11". You know, it's a 20-year-old camper van. It's a Heimer. And you sort of have to wheedle in and then you have to lower yourself down. But because I'm tall, I've got long legs, 32-inch legs. You can't actually leave yourself down without crashing open the door, and then everybody's outside waving at you. And then as you drive, the loo roll flies off, and then floor's all wet because you've had a shower. It's all very... I'm not sure I'm the camping type, Natalie. Yeah. But,
I did it as a kid a lot. So.
Well, exactly. As a kid, it's great fun,
Natalie, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you on the show. Thank you so much for joining us. We really have enjoyed spending time talking to you. For those that want to find out more about Whitcomb HR and what you do, can you give us a shout out for your website, Twitter, Facebook, whatever you want to do?
The website is www.whitcombhr.co.uk. We've got Twitter, Instagram and Facebook, LinkedIn. LinkedIn's probably the best one for businesses for us. But just type in Whitcomb HR and you'll see us.
Fantastic. We've put a link to your website on the radio website. That will stay there forever. So if anybody wants to find it, that's where you'll find it. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you today, Natalie. Thank you so much for joining us. We look forward to you coming back at some point in the future. Good luck with your next offspring.
Thank you. Yes, I want to ask, when is the baby due?
Baby's due in November.
Oh, right.
I do have someone, my HR employee, Heather, who's going to be taking over the business for a little bit. Just like
there's a lovely Scottish name.
Yeah. Heather. So presumably you've set yourself up with some maternity leave.
A little bit, not really much. But I thought a few months, over Christmas especially, I can have some time with the child.
Right.
And what about your husband, Natalie? Is he going to be off furlough soon, or what's happening with him?
He started a new job a couple of weeks ago, so he's working.
Congratulations.
Fantastic.
That's good. He's loving life. So we're going to see what happens. But hopefully Heather will be able to cover as much as possible while I'm off, and then I'll be back in the new year.
Fantastic. Brilliant. Hope it all goes fantastically well for you. I'm sure it will. Thank you so much for joining us today, Natalie. And we'll talk to you again soon.
Perfect. Nice to see
you. Bye for now. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Welcome back. That was the fantastic Natalie Whitcomb of Whitcomb HR talking all about the services they have on offer to small and medium-sized businesses.
Hugely interesting. We could have had her on for 2 hours, couldn't we?
Yeah, absolutely. Really interesting discussion. So thank you, Natalie, for that. We've still got loads of things to talk to you about, loads of things to discuss. We've got another guest to come on later in the show.
Loads of tweets.
Yeah. I've got a tweet here from Morpheus Insurance. We can offer quotes for many aspects of business insurance. You can call us on 0800 276 1155. That's 0800 276 1155. Or visit our website, which is morpheusinsurance.co.uk. That's MORPHEUS, morpheusinsurance.co.uk.
And a big hello to Red Cup Cafe UK. They're on the Twitter at Red Cup Cafe UK. And they... what do they do? They're obviously a cafe. They do fresh, healthy, homemade food in a relaxed environment, very veggie friendly. They serve food with a purpose, and they're in North Harrow. You can find them on redcupcafe.co.uk.
That's not easy to say, is it?
No, redcupcafe.co.uk.
Red Cup Cafe.
But big hello to them. They've been giving me tips on elbows.
Okay.
As has Athelbrae, because she apparently broke her elbow once.
Yeah, absolutely. Well,
you've no
about...
idea how much you use an elbow.
Oh, I know. I know. Until at the moment, you can't shake hands, so you have to use your elbow. You have to bump elbows. talking of Athelbrae, I've got August the 15th, that was last week, saw the 22nd anniversary of Managing Director Keith Merrin making the decision to leave a secure job and using his background as a training manager to follow his desire to work for himself by starting his own training company. Despite a mortgage, two very young children, and no guarantee of paid work, he felt it was the right option for him professionally and the family long term. It was a risk, but a calculated one. So the result, 22 years later, an award-winning business, a stable of 25 specialists, now a second-generation family business, businesses throughout the UK and Ireland who are proud to call friends as well as clients. That's fantastic, fantastic news. 22 years in the training business, Athelbrae Limited. Give them a follow on Twitter, Athelbrae LTD.
And of course, they were on the Business Bunker show, was it a couple of weeks back?
A few weeks back, yeah, about four weeks back.
Very, very interesting. A big hello to Richard Shawnee, who's on the Twitter. He's retail mentoring. He's the founder of the Shop Local. Use that hashtag, Shop Local campaign in 2011. He's a big supporter of High Streets and Indie, small biz supporter, host of Indie Hour, which is every Tuesday at 8 p.m. So you can have a fix of Bunker, have a little lie down and then some tea and then listen to get involved with that on Twitter at 8 p.m. on a Tuesday. He says buy social and support local. And he's got a retailmentoring.wordpress.com.
Fantastic. A shout out to Charity Buddy on the Twitter, charity_buddy is their Twitter handle. Give Martin a follow. Big shout out for him, Charity Buddy. And a shout out for Pink Spag VA Services. That's the lovely Vicky, Pink Spag.
Oh, yes. Yeah,
underscore Vicky, V-I-K-K-I-E. Big shout out to Vicky and the team at Pink Spag.
Always makes me a bit hungry, that, does it, you?
What, Pink Spag?
Well, I always imagine a little bolognese.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
who wouldn't? Yeah. So, yeah, I've got a couple of emails to read. Do you want me to read them yet or not?
You can read one, yeah.
That's very kind of you. So the FSB Kent, we're great supporters and they're great supporters of the Bunker Show. They're absolutely thrilled to announce that they're sponsoring this year's virtual apprenticeship graduation ceremony, which is on the 2nd of October. That's a diary date for you, 2nd of October. You can find details on K and mappgrad.org. So K and, that's written and, A-N-D, mappgrad.org. grad.org. Sorry, there's two P's there, mappgrad.org. And then the Canterbury Festival 2020 is set to go ahead this autumn despite coronavirus pandemic. And the organisers have very bravely confirmed that the Canterbury Festival is set to go ahead this autumn despite the pandemic. And whilst many of the city's major events, including its Christmas ice rink, the Marlowe's Pantomime and the Canterbury Pride have been cancelled due to the COVID-19 crisis, those behind the hugely popular annual celebration of the arts have decided the show must go on, and they've announced plans to run a reduced festival this October with smaller scale events, social distancing and limited capacities. So you're off the hook, Paul Anders, for the ice rink display you were going to be doing.
Oh, I was looking forward to that, to be honest.
Yeah. I mean, I know you've got that tutu hidden away.
Yep,
already for your ice rink display, but possibly next year.
Oh, possibly.
Do you want me to read another? Or
No. I'm just trying to catch up and see what tweets we've
got. Oh, it's going mad on Twitter.
Yeah. The lovely Kim Stevens, the care lady, has tweeted a huge shout out to Kim and her team of people that provide care services in the home. Fantastic job they do. And thank you so much for supporting the Business Bunker Show. We really do appreciate that. I'm just trying to go through what we've got here.
There's a lovely Grain and Sustain. A lot of mine are based in Scotland from my journey.
Yeah,
there,
you've been swanning around Scotland, haven't you?
I've got lots of them. But the Grain and Sustain on Twitter, they're an award-winning zero-waste store. Over 250 food, bathroom and household refills, handmade ethical gifts. And they do, I believe, post out to you. You can find them on facebook.com/grain, GRAINAND, Sustain. Give them a
Fantastic.
Follow.
Had a tweet from Tenterton Chamber.
Hello.
Do you have a Love Tenterton card? They're now available from a whole list of places in the town. Stanley Hardware, TSR Shoe Repairs, ePalace Records, Advantech IT, Potters, the Ancient Borough, the Old Dairy Brewery, and Caxton Tenterton. Do check out your loyalty card if you're in the Tenterton area. It's certainly a great benefit to have. The FSB Kent have got an event on Wednesday the 9th of September, and it's about maximising your membership of the FSB. And the event is What's In It For Me. It's taking place on Wednesday the 9th of September, 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. Now more than ever is the time to make sure you're making the most of your FSB benefits and membership benefits. You can find out about the event by going to www.fsb.org.uk/event calendar/ FSB Kent, What's In It For Me. So that's fsb.org.uk/event calendar/ FSB Kent, What's In It For Me. And that's taking place on the 9th of September. Blimey, it is nearly almost September.
I know. Let's not talk about autumn, please. I do love summer. I'm a summer girl. Did we mention Tracy Ferguson as well?
Go on, give her a shout.
So she is on the Twitter at Tazi64, T-A-Z-I-64, and she's saying, hello, B-Bunker, hashtag. And she's very busy doing her lovely, remind me of the cards, I've got camper brain that she does.
I can picture them. I can't remember what they call them.
I will tell you in a minute because I'll have a look. But yeah. She has these amazing cards that it's Plucky's World.
Plucky's World, that's it, yeah.
Plucky's World. And she's a tutor and a trainer, personal development coach, Prince's Trust mentor, and a lifelong learner. She's based in Rochester and Kent. So give her a follow, Tazi64. But I have a camper van brain, which is why I forgot Plucky's World.
Right.
Camper van brain. Yeah, coffee hasn't worked.
Well, you know what kind of brain I've got?
Well, fancy morning spritz.
It turns to mush this Saturday, apparently.
Why?
Because it's my birthday on Saturday.
Oh, I see.
And I'm in quarantine, so I've had to cancel my party.
I know. I was all ready.
I'm still waiting for my bus pass. Council haven't sent me my bus pass, and I want it.
Yeah, well, knowing you, you just drive the bus anyway, because you say, you get in there and go, no, hang on, you don't want to go like that. I'll show you. Move out the way.
It's the only benefit you get now. So I want the bus pass. We've got no buses where I live, but I want the bus pass. That's what
It's very sad where I live because the buses are empty. So there's the driver with his mask on, and then there's like one person at the back, and they're double deckers. And I sort of think, you know, for the environment, maybe they need to borrow a few from Stagecoach or something that's local.
Yeah.
We've got quite a lot of local bus things, and just have a single decker with one person on it and a driver.
Sure. Whatever your business strengths, you need to shout out about them. Why not enter the Maidstone Business Awards and the Ashford Business Awards 2020? Do it now. Entry's free. To find out all about the awards for this year, if you go to www.businessawardskent.co.uk. That's www.businessawardskent.co.uk. Check it out.
The Kenwood Place has run alpaca and archery experiences throughout the school holidays. How lovely. If you're looking for local days out in Kent this summer, why not enjoy an alpaca or archery experience at Kenwood Place? And the alpaca experience lasts around an hour, they say, and gives you the chance to learn about Kenwood's friendly family of alpacas and walk round the 15 acres of Kent countryside. And Kenwood Place have 8 alpacas. They've got names, Paul Andrew. It's Pepe, Luigi, Romeo, Maximilian, Mario, Gizmo, Idris, and Dreyfus. There's an Italian influence going on there. So pick your alpaca and enjoy your walk with them across the site. Kenwood Place's archery experience lasts around an hour and a half to allow you to learn the basics before firing at their targets. All levels of ability are welcome, and there is also the option for the archery experience to come to you if you're hosting a socially distanced party. What a good idea. Mm. All funds raised through these experiences are going towards supporting the work of Kenwood Trust, a charity that provides support to those affected by addiction, homelessness and crime. And Penny Williams, who's the CEO of the Kenwood Trust, has said, "We're pleased that our alpaca and archery experiences at Kenwood Place are proving to be popular with the general public. And we're working on expanding our offering going forwards." You can find them on 3 W's, Kenwood, that's W-A-R-D at the end, Kenwood, trust.org.uk. They're on the Twitter at Kenwood Trust, K-E-N-W-A-R-D Trust, and Instagram, Kenwood Trust as well. So you'll find them all there, and on Facebook, of course.
Fantastic.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.